All right, so picture this, right? A hurricane rips through your town, leaves a trail of destruction, and you're left there needing help, like desperately. Relief workers show up, ready to pitch in, but then, get this, they have to pull back. They're getting threats, and not your run-of-the-mill threats either. Threats fueled by misinformation, straight up.
Yeah, and it's happening right now.
Right now, as we speak, in North Carolina, they got hit with not one, but two major hurricanes, back to back, Helene and then Milton. North Carolina's right in the thick of it, trying to recover. FEMA's there on the ground, trying to do their thing. But get this, their efforts are being seriously messed with, and not by the usual stuff. We're talking toxic rumors, completely false narratives, misinformation spreading like crazy.
It's wild, and what's really scary is how quickly these situations can escalate. You've got full-blown conspiracy theories about the relief effort just exploding online, and we're way past just some internet trolls venting.
Oh, absolutely.
It's gotten so bad that FEMA is having to make serious changes to how they operate just to keep their own people safe. Like, think about that for a second. The people who are there to help are being put at risk because of
Yeah.
made-up stories.
It's like we're living in some kind of disaster movie, but the real disaster is like our ability to tell what's true from what's totally made up. And the thing is, this isn't just talk.
Right?
This is having real life on the ground consequences. We're talking FEMA workers getting moved to different locations, disaster survivor teams who can't even go door to door anymore. It's too dangerous. They're being told to work from fixed locations. So what's that mean?
It means the whole recovery process slows
Yes,
down.
exactly.
People can't get the help they need as quickly.
And everyone's at risk, the aid workers and the people who desperately need that aid. It's a vicious cycle.
Totally. These delays and disruptions, they just breed more uncertainty.
Right.
More frustration. And you know what that does? Just
Yeah.
makes people more likely to believe the misinformation and the conspiracy theories. It's like wildfire, this distrust.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've got a perfect example of this happening right now in Ashe County, North Carolina. The Ashe County Sheriff's Office actually had to put out a statement because things got so bad. They said FEMA had to pause their operations in the area because of these threats. Imagine that. You're in a disaster zone, you need help, and you see that.
Talk about fear and confusion. You're a resident in Ashe County. Your entire community is devastated. You're depending on FEMA, and then poof, they're gone.
Exactly.
That just creates a breeding ground for more panic, more distrust.
And here's the truly sad part. Some residents are buying into this stuff. The Washington Post had this story, a Forest Service employee, just trying to help out, gets yelled at by a resident right to their face. The resident says, "We don't want the government here." I mean, imagine driving for hours to help only to be met with that.
It's a gut punch, and it highlights the human cost of this misinformation in a way that statistics just can't capture. These are folks who genuinely believe they're doing the right thing, protecting their own, but the reality is they're pushing away the very help they need.
It's fear, misinformation, and desperation all colliding.
Exactly. And this distrust in government aid, it's not new, is it?
No, not at all. We've seen this before, haven't we?
We have. After other hurricanes, other disasters, it's almost a pattern. And you know what often fuels it? Political figures, commentators pushing these narratives, giving them this air of legitimacy. You know, it spreads like wildfire after them.
Oh, for sure. We've even seen former President Trump weighing in, amplifying some of these claims about aid distribution that are, to be frank, completely unsubstantiated.
And when figures with influence, especially those in positions of authority, come out and endorse or repeat misinformation,
Yeah.
it gives it this credibility that's really hard to counter. Like it legitimizes it somehow.
Totally. And once that misinformation is out there, good luck putting that genie back in the bottle.
Oh, I know. It's almost impossible. Social media has just amplified the speed and reach of this stuff exponentially. It's a whole different ballgame now.
It really is. And a perfect example of that Chimney Rock, North Carolina.
Chimney Rock is a textbook case of how quickly things go haywire. There was this rumor, completely baseless, about the government seizing property, and it went viral.
People actually thought FEMA was going to bulldoze bodies under the rubble. It's insane.
I know, right? And because of that, people were calling for militias to confront FEMA. I mean, that's what's so terrifying, you know?
Yeah.
It went from online chatter to, well, the potential for real-world violence. And it wasn't just talk either. The Washington Post, they got hold of this story about how National Guard troops actually ran into two trucks full of armed militia members. And get this, these guys were claiming they were out hunting FEMA. I mean, this is what makes these situations so scary. It's easy to dismiss online chatter, but when it spills into the real world like that, you know?
It's chilling. It really is. Almost feels like, I don't know, we've stepped into this like bizarre alternate reality where the internet is this funhouse mirror and all our fears and anxieties, they get like warped into something actually dangerous.
Unfortunately, we kind of have. And it raises a big question, doesn't it? How do you actually combat this? How do you restore trust in these institutions? You know, promote media literacy, make sure the right information is getting to the people who need it most, especially in the middle of an emergency.
Right. Like, how do we build a more resilient information ecosystem? Like, we need some kind of disaster response plan, but for bad information.
Exactly. It's a different kind of disaster response, right? Mm-hmm. We're so used to focusing on the immediate needs, the physical stuff, the food, water, shelter. But these situations, they really highlight how crucial it is to address the information needs of a community, too, especially one that's just been through something like this.
You can't just rely on those press releases and the town hall meetings anymore, can you? I mean, not when misinformation can circle the globe in, what, milliseconds?
That's true.
It's like bringing a rain barrel to a flash flood. You need a completely different set of tools these days, something built for the digital age.
You got it. We need to be proactive, not reactive. We need to invest in media literacy initiatives, make fact-checking more robust, work directly with social media companies to try to curb this harmful content. And it can't just be a one-time thing either.
Right.
This has to be continuous, not just something you pull out after a disaster.
It's definitely easier said than done, though. These social media companies, they've been wrestling with this for years. And let's be honest, the results haven't exactly been stellar. Kind of disheartening, to be honest.
True, but you can't give up, yeah. Right? We have to hold these platforms accountable, push for more transparency, advocate for policies that put truth and accuracy ahead of sensationalism and clicks. It's an uphill battle, no doubt, but it's a fight worth having.
100%. And what about us, though, as individuals? Like, you're scrolling through your feed and you see some crazy post about the hurricane relief effort. What's our role in all of this?
That's really where it all starts, isn't it? We all have a part to play in fighting this misinformation. It starts with thinking critically, questioning what you see online, especially on social media. Verify before you share, always. And here's a big one, be wary of anything that feels emotionally charged, anything that just seems to confirm the biases you already have.
Right. Trust but verify. Sounds so cliche, but it's truer now than ever.
100%. And if something sounds too outrageous to be true, there's a good chance it is. Do a little digging. Look at reputable news sources, government websites, fact-checking organizations. We have the tools.
Exactly.
There's no excuse for just hitting that share button without thinking these days.
And here's another thing. If you do come across something that seems off, don't be afraid to report it. These platforms, they have ways for you to flag misinformation, don't they?
They do. It might feel like a drop in the bucket, but every little bit helps. The more we all get involved in flagging and debunking this stuff, the harder it is for it to take hold.
It's a team effort, that's for sure. But going back to those folks working on the ground, the aid workers, what can we do to actually protect them? I mean, they're out there literally putting their lives on the line in these really volatile situations.
It's a tough one, for sure. On a practical level, yeah, more security measures are probably necessary, at least in the short term. But if we really want to solve this, we need to get at the root cause. And that's the misinformation itself.
So we're back to those media literacy efforts we talked about earlier. How do we actually make them better, though?
We need to give people the tools to evaluate information with a critical eye. Teach them how to spot fake news, how to recognize propaganda, how to see those manipulation tactics, and crucially, help them understand that spreading false information, especially during an emergency, it has real-world consequences.
So it's about empowering people to be more discerning about the information they're consuming. They've got to be active participants, not just passively taking it all in.
Exactly. And this isn't something you do once and you're done. It's got to be an ongoing thing. Education, raising awareness. We've got to meet people where they are, you know, in schools, community centers, online, and make media literacy a fundamental part of civic education.
It's like, we need to be teaching critical thinking the same way we teach, you know, first aid or CPR. It's that important these days.
Yeah.
Especially when you're talking about a crisis situation.
It's about creating this culture where you're not just accepting everything you see, you know.
Yeah.
Informed skepticism, questioning, verifying. It's got to become second nature, especially online. And again, we've got to be proactive.
Yeah.
Thinking ahead, not just reacting after the fact.
We've covered a lot of ground today, haven't we? The hurricanes, the incredible work being done by the relief workers, and then this tidal wave of misinformation that just seems to be dragging everyone down.
It's really disheartening.
It is. It really is.
It just goes to show, you know, how interconnected everything is. You often think of natural disasters as these isolated events, but they're not, are they? This case really highlights how deeply they're tied to these social and political forces.
Right.
And those forces, they can either make a bad situation so much worse, or they can actually help make things better.
Sure.
It's a reminder that how we communicate the information we consume has a very real impact.
Yeah.
Real consequences.
It's like this perfect storm, but not in a good way, right? You've got
yeah.
the actual storm itself, and then this chaos and vulnerability that comes after. That's when this misinformation really gets a foothold. It's like a virus, you know?
Yeah.
It just preys on that uncertainty, that fear.
And the scary thing is, this isn't just a North Carolina problem. This is a global issue we're grappling with.
Mm-hmm.
This erosion of trust, the way information is being weaponized, our information ecosystems are vulnerable. That's the thing people need to realize.
Especially during a crisis.
Especially during a crisis. The very systems we rely on for accurate information can be compromised at the worst possible time.
It does feel like we're at this crossroads. We have access to more information than ever before in history, but we're practically drowning in misinformation at the same time.
It's overwhelming.
It's getting harder and harder to tell what's real.
And that's why these conversations, these deep dives, they're so important.
Yeah.
You know, it's not enough to just point at the problem and say, oh, look how bad it is.
Right.
We have to find solutions. And then even more importantly, we have to act on those solutions.
So where do we go from here? I mean, we've talked about media literacy, fact checking, putting more pressure on those social media platforms. What else can we do, though, especially at the local level, you know, to rebuild that trust, to push back against this wave of misinformation?
Well, for starters, I think we have to acknowledge there's no magic bullet, no one-size-fits-all solution. We need a multi-layered approach, something that's tailored to the specific challenges of each community. We've got to utilize the strengths that different groups bring to the table.
So, like, what would that look like in practice? Give me an example.
Okay, so let's say FEMA partners with local libraries, right, to offer these crash courses in how to spot fake news right after a disaster hits.
Okay, I like it.
You're getting that vital, accurate information from a source you already trust. Or picture your local community center turning into this hub for fighting misinformation, you know, offering workshops on how to identify and debunk this stuff.
I love that. Empowering those local leaders, the folks people already know and trust.
Because here's the thing, combating misinformation isn't just about throwing facts at people and hoping something sticks. It's about building those relationships,
mm-hmm.
you know, encouraging dialogue, creating spaces where people feel comfortable actually asking questions, sharing their concerns, and getting accurate information from sources they find credible.
It's a totally different way of thinking about things. It's almost like we need a paradigm shift, right, in how we approach disaster preparedness. It's not just about stocking up on supplies, on water and batteries and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's also about building up our information resilience.
You got it. Information resilience, being able to access, assess, and act on good, accurate information, even when you've got all this misinformation swirling around, that's crucial. Just as important as any other type of disaster preparedness.
Because when it comes down to it, it's about saving lives, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
When you've got this misinformation, making people distrust legitimate aid organizations, making them refuse help, or even worse, turn to violence.
Right.
The consequences can be devastating.
It's a powerful reminder that information, it's powerful, for better or for worse.
Absolutely. It's a call to action for all of us, individuals, communities, institutions,
yeah.
to step up and create this more informed, more discerning, more resilient information ecosystem.
Well said. Well, that just about wraps up our deep dive for today. But before we go, I want to leave you with this. The next time you're online, you're scrolling through your feeds, especially during a crisis, remember what we talked about today, be critical. Be curious, be cautious. You're not just a bystander in all of this. You have a choice to make. Are you going to amplify the noise? Or are you going to be a voice of reason? Because in this day and age, your ability to tell the difference between truth and fiction, that could save lives.